10 months after the Iowa caucuses and roughly $1 billion in spending later, the campaign is over. So what's the takeaway from the 2012 election? This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This hour, political analysis, the day after, from Dennis Goldford of Drake University and Chris Larimer of the University of Northern Iowa. We'll look at what the Obama victory means, but also the outcome of the congressional races here in Iowa, the vote on judicial retention, and state house races that kept Democrats with a slim majority in the Iowa Senate. Share your reaction, your disappointment, or your joy after this news. President Obama wins a decisive re-election and wins Iowa again, the state that launched his presidential bid in 2008. The GOP fails in its bid to wrest control of the Senate from the Democrats, with rape comments sinking two GOP candidates in Indiana and Missouri. In Iowa, Justice David Wiggins survives a retention vote. Also, Iowa now in its new form with four congressional districts split east-west, the Democrats on the east side in those two. And in the West, the GOP with number 3 and 4 districts. Lots to talk about today on Politics Wednesday. Joining us, Dennis Goldford of Drake University in our Des Moines studio. Hi, Dennis.
A very groggy Dennis Goldford. Good afternoon.
All right. I understand. Same on this side. Chris Larimer, perhaps you're groggy too. A late night, exciting returns. Chris Larimer joining us from Cedar Falls. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Ben. Thanks for having me.
Okay. Last night, let's start with the biggest race. Last night, Governor Mitt Romney took the stage in Boston to concede defeat in this 2012 presidential race. A speech that lasted just 5 minutes. He said he would pray for President Obama to be successful in leading the country, called on voters and elected leaders to embrace values, not partisan bickering.
The nation, as you know, is at a critical point. At a time like this, we can't risk partisan bickering and political posturing. Our leaders have to reach across the aisle to do the people's work. And we citizens also have to rise to the occasion. We look to our teachers and professors. We count on you not just to teach, but to inspire our children with a passion for learning and discovery. We look to our pastors and priests and rabbis and counselors of all kinds to testify of the enduring principles upon which our society is built: honesty, charity, integrity, and family. We look to our parents. For in the final analysis, everything depends on the success of our homes. We look to job creators of all kinds. We're counting on you to invest, to hire, to step forward. And we look to Democrats and Republicans in government at all levels to put the people before the politics.
And speaking in Chicago, President Obama also called on Americans to put the divisive campaign behind them and unite behind common goals.
That's where we need to go. Forward. That's where we need to go. Now, we will disagree, sometimes fiercely, about how to get there. As it has for more than two centuries, progress will come in fits and starts. It's not always a straight line. It's not always a smooth path. By itself, the recognition that we have common hopes and dreams won't end all the gridlock or solve all our problems or substitute for the painstaking work of building consensus and making the difficult compromises needed to move this country forward. But that common bond is where we must begin.
President Obama last night in Chicago in his victory speech. River to River listeners, what's your reaction to the election results? What do you think it means? Please feel free this hour to share your joy or perhaps your disappointment, even anger, in the results. What do you see going forward with the results that we were given in this election? 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. Our email, we're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Dennis Goldford, let me go to you first. We heard in the concession speech, this victory speech by President Obama, a call for unity. How likely is that call for unity to be embraced?
Well, you know, I don't know who it was, but during the audio from Governor Romney, when he mentioned working across the aisle, we heard a yell, sort of an angry yell of some sort. And again, without knowing precisely who that was or what he might have said, that's the danger, because there's still some anger and rage, I think, on the Republican side. And a lot of the difficulty, I guess I would characterize this way. If we see our country as a house in need of some repair, you know, your conventional liberal argument would be, well, let's add on a room or two. And your conventional conservative argument would be, no, we don't need to do that. We'll renovate and remodel. Your Tea Party argument is burn the thing down. And that doesn't allow for much compromise. And Speaker Boehner, recall, during the debt ceiling fight, could not control his own caucus. So even if the leadership in Congress, and we're not sure where Mitch McConnell is in this regard yet, even if the leadership on the Republican side in Congress wanted to compromise and work with the president in some manner, it's an open question how far they can control their caucus.
Sounds like you're saying the GOP, even if minds were changed in some of the GOP, it's not going to allow the type of compromise that perhaps will be needed in this case.
I'm concerned that that's the case.
Where, Chris Larimer, where can the parties find room for compromise in the coming years? Do you have the same read or a different read than Dennis Goldford?
No, actually, it's a pretty similar read, because I'm not sure that the incentives are there for either party to compromise at this point. I think if you're Democrats and you're congressional Democrats, you see last night as, certainly a victory pretty much across the board. For congressional Republicans, it's the day after the election. Now you're thinking about the elections in 2014 and trying to set yourself up for that. And so you're worried about if you compromise with the president on, say, something the so-called fiscal cliff that's coming up, dealing with the debt ceiling and spending, you have to be careful about making yourself vulnerable for an election in 2 years. So, I still think there's going to be quite a bit of gridlock, quite a bit of pushback from House Republicans.
If we were to pick issues, though, parts of an Obama or Republican agenda that are likely to be, let's say, abandoned in the coming 4 years, can you name any of those?
It will be interesting to see if there is any movement on the tax cuts, excuse me, the Bush-era tax cuts. Some of the exit polls that we saw out of Iowa talking about, that most of the voters, or at least well over half of the voters, preferring to see tax cuts remain in place for those making $250,000 or less, and taxes go up on those making considerably more than that. And so that may be one area where if you're seeing maybe a bit of a leftward tilt in the electorate, that may be a way to win over some independent voters if you're a Republican in maybe a slightly leaning Republican district.
Mm-hmm. Dennis Goldford, how do you see them addressing the fiscal cliff now with this configuration?
Well, again, it has to do with whether Speaker Boehner and Mitch McConnell in the Senate can get their particular party caucus to go along with some idea of working for the president. I mean, before, they really didn't work with him when he came into office in a full head of steam and looked to be in a pretty powerful position, although I think he didn't play his hand very well. The president didn't. Now we have a lame duck president, essentially, who has substantially fewer votes than he did last time, popular votes, as well as fewer electoral votes. He's certainly still the president. And you have someone who, with regard to what Chris mentioned about independence, who reverted to pattern, which was that the Democratic nominee loses the independent vote to the Republicans. So, again, I think it's a question of whether, as I suggested to somebody earlier this morning, President Obama can become a different kind of president from the kind he's been for these first 4 years.
Okay, let's go to our phones. What's your reaction to the election results, your hopes, your fears? 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. Dave is joining us from Des Moines. Dave, I can't quite get your connection going here. Dave, let's see if I've got it now. Dave, there you are. Hi, from Des Moines. Dave.
How you doing?
Pretty good. What's your reaction, your comment?
Well, I guess my reaction is that, I'm a little disappointed. I guess I consider myself kind of a moderate Republican. And I think the Republican Party is just getting a little too radical. There's too many or not enough people, you know, leading the party. We got these very, very polarized people kind of driving the fringes, and we need to kind of get back more, you know, centrist. You know, we're losing the minority vote, we're losing the female vote, and, you know, even here in Iowa, you know, we have the issues trying to oust the Supreme Court justices. And, I mean, I think anybody, I shouldn't say anybody, but I think most people realize that it's a legislative issue. It's not a judicial issue. And I think the Republican Party really needs to step back and take a look at, you know, where they want to go. And, and I think a good start would be to, you know, start working with, you know,
Do you see an issue for Republicans that they need to moderate or change a view on? Can you name one?
Probably, you know, the illegal alien.
So
this would be a good start.
Immigration reform is what they need
right.
to move on. You raise a good point, Dave, in Des Moines. The demographics of this election, what is that telling us, Chris Larimer, when we talk about the women's vote, Latino vote, and the independent vote? What do you see there as lessons for how the GOP might go forward, as Dave hopes?
Well, there certainly is some evidence that from the voting patterns from yesterday that Republicans lost big among Hispanics, among minorities, among women, particularly in Iowa. But, you know, we also have to remember that this is the day after the election, so this is when the loss is going to sting the most. You know, Romney was probably the most centrist candidate when you think back to the Iowa caucuses. So they did have a fairly centrist candidate among everybody that was running for the Republican nomination. We're also only 2 years out from a year in which Republicans made enormous gains, both, you know, at the federal level, a huge setback for President Obama in Congress, and Republicans made historic gains across state legislatures. And so, you know, they may want to be a little bit careful about second-guessing themselves too much at this point. But again, you know, if you're just looking at the demographics of it, there does seem to be some trends that they are losing key demographics for winning elections.
Mm-hmm. A bitter campaign, miles away from hope and change. We heard from President Obama in 2008. But it did succeed. The demographics stacked up. Dennis Goldford, your comment on that.
I don't have any data yet from the exit polls, but I recall that after the 2008 election, there were five key factors that identified a likely McCain voter, Republican voter: older, white, male, rural, Southern. And these are all declining demographics. And so, yeah, the Republican Party is 90% white. That's the figure that seems to be going around. And there was a possibility in the short run, like yesterday, they perhaps could have ridden that to a victory. But certainly the Republicans demographically have long-term problems. At the same time, despite those demographics, there's still a substantial segment of the party that will take from yesterday the notion, as they took from 2008, that they lost because they weren't conservative enough. And so there may be further attempts to purge the rhinos, Republicans in name only, that we saw in the 2010 season.
What is your take on that? Would have Rick Santorum have done a better job of one who is more to the right and not as moderate as Mitt Romney?
No, I don't think he was. But part of the problem with Romney, I think neither Romney nor Obama was a strong candidate. But Romney was a weak candidate to some extent because, you know, which Mitt Romney are you talking about? And as much as Democrats talked about the issue of trust and who is this guy, and you can pull up a video that shows him on any side of any particular issue over the past several years, the first people concerned about that were conservative Republicans who never quite trusted him. So, and you will see them blame, as we've already seen some cases on various websites, they're, of course, blaming him for the electoral loss. They're not looking at demographics or anything like that.
Okay. Dave in Des Moines, thank you for your call. Let's move on to Ryan in Waterloo. Hi, Ryan.
Hello, how are we doing? Thanks for having me.
Pretty good. What's on your mind this one day after the election?
I'm a very strong Democrat. I'm very excited that President Barack Obama has won. But I do share some disappointment. The first disappointment I have is the blatant disrespect for our president. Most people refer him as Mr. Obama when he's the president, and we need to fall in line and follow his lead. The second thing I'm disappointed in is that the fact that media and several entities have cast the African American as unreliable voters, and that the only reason we vote is because he's a black president, when the Republican also had a potential African American candidate. But we do have some very firm social issues that we focus on when we vote, and the fortunate thing is we found a candidate we do believe that can focus on those issues, such as the unemployment rate throughout the nation. We have a 20% African American unemployment rate. The second thing is incarceration. Here in Iowa, we have roughly a 32% incarceration of African American males. Those are things that we focus on and that we feel that this president can correct. So that's why we vote, and we do have issues that we focus on, and it's not just because he's a black person.
Okay, Ryan in Waterloo, thank you for those comments. Of course, compared to 2008, Chris Larimer, we can agree. Ryan's comments also taken in this, but also in 2008, the race was a much bigger factor in the election than it was in 2012 here.
Yeah, it was a much bigger factor, but I think if you look at the numbers right now, you know, you still see black voters as reliably Democratic voters and reliably supporters of President Obama. So I haven't seen a lot of evidence that they are unreliable if the question is in terms of turning out for President Obama, and not just because he's an African-American candidate, but simply because there's an alignment on a number of issues that fit with the Democratic agenda.
Mm-hmm. This tweet from Kay Henderson of Radio Iowa, she says the Iowa Secretary of State's system says over a million and a half Iowans voted in this election. That surpasses the 2008 tally by 12,000. About 72% of eligible voters in Iowa cast a ballot. Ellen tweets this question: for the presidential election, Iowa wasn't that close. Why were the polls much closer? Dennis Goldford, what do you think of the polls matching up with the actual results?
Well, you know, remember, the polls are simply a snapshot on a given day or over a series of days. And, you know, most of them tend to be pretty good in terms of selecting sample sizes and estimating by a model how likely a percentage of the electorate will the Republicans be, Democrats, Independents, and that sort of thing. But I think that really the big question, see, both in Iowa and for the nation in terms of the polls, was whether or not young voters and minority or voters would turn out for the president the way they did last time around. Because all things being equal, Republicans are more reliable voters. They're more likely to vote than your average Democrat is. And a lot of that is because so much of the Democratic support is young people and minority voters, and they just don't show up as much. We saw that in the midterms. I mean, in the midterm elections of 2010, you always have a decline when there's no presidential race. But still, if you take 2008 as a baseline, the national Republican vote in 2010 declined by 15 million, but the national Democratic vote declined by 30.5 million, which is why you now have a Republican House of Representatives, which they've kept, many more Republican governors and state legislators. So I think the polls weren't sure to what extent the Obama organization, which they did succeed maybe overperforming in turning out those younger and minority voters.
Let's shift quickly before we have to take a break to the Iowa congressional races. Eight-term incumbent Democratic Congressman Leonard Boswell defeated last night in a rare race, pitted two of Iowa's longest-serving congressmen against each other. Tom Lathan will return to Washington, representing Iowa's newly redrawn 3rd District, central counties of Iowa, along with the Southwest, in conceding the race and essentially announcing retirement at the age of 78. Leonard Boswell expressed disappointment but optimism.
But, you know, we just got to leave here tonight disappointed. Yes, we are. We are. But with the hope and the things that can happen to this country that we get to live our lives in. You've heard me say it. I'll say it one last time, I guess. You know, I started about 75 miles south of here in a tenant farmhouse, and look what we've gotten to do. And we've got to be sure that we take our country forward in the areas of education and science and many, many things that we've talked about. To be sure that we have the American dream for these little ones, and that's what has been the thing that has caused me to want to carry on as we have for these many, many years.
Republican Tom Latham's victory was a bright spot in an otherwise disappointing night for the Iowa GOP. In accepting victory, he called for a spirit of bipartisanship and vowed to represent voters of both political parties.
I want to continue to bring the voice of Iowa to Washington. You know, we obviously have great problems in this country. I'm going to continue to work every day for people to have opportunities for jobs, to grow this economy, to make America stronger. And that's what this election, I think, was all about, and that's why we were successful tonight. But I will tell you, it's going to take all of us. And we've got to understand that we've got to put our people before politics and progress before partisanship. We've got to get the job done to solve the problems and have the solutions that we need for this country to go forward. The American dream is in jeopardy if, in fact, we don't act and act correctly and do the right thing for everyone today. So that's why, with a very humble heart, I thank you so much. I will continue to listen to each and every one of you, no matter what your political background, no matter what your political beliefs are. We will always listen, be available, and I'll do my best to represent each and every one of you. So with that, thank you all. God bless.
Great victory. Tom Latham, the victor in Iowa's new 3rd District. In the 4th District, Steve King beating Christy Vilsack. In the 1st District, Ben Lang being defeated by Bruce Braley, the Democratic incumbent, and the incumbent Dave Lobsack, Democrat, beating challenger John Archer in the 2nd District. No surprises in congressional races, I guess, here in Iowa. I wonder, Dennis, or let me go to you, Chris. Does that tell us anything about the coattails of the president, or perhaps the lack of regard for coattails here in Iowa?
Yeah, I'm not sure if it speaks to much of the coattails of the president. Certainly the presidential campaign defined some of these congressional campaigns in terms of the issues that were discussed. But, you know, I think if you think back to the summer or early fall, we would have been surprised if these results panned out differently. I think this is what we all expected. If you just looked at the districts, you looked at the counties, you looked at party registration in those districts, I think the 2-2 split with Eastern Iowa having the two Democrats and the two Republicans out in Western Iowa is exactly what we expected.
Quickly, before we have to take a break, Dennis Goldford, your read on this the Romney campaign making this late map extension, touting the prospect of winning over 300 electoral votes, capturing historically blue presidential states, Pennsylvania, Minnesota, Michigan, all just a bluff?
Either a bluff or a pipe dream. I had the sense listening to NPR this past weekend, and, you know, it depends upon what quotes people air and when, but I really had the sense over the weekend as I listened to a couple of quotes from speeches and talks from Governor Romney, it sounded like somebody who knew he wasn't going to win.
What did you hear? Was it a tone or words?
It was a tone. It wasn't really words. It was just certain a tone, a certain wistfulness. Not just, oh, I love campaigning and this is my last campaign. No, not that kind of wistfulness.
Mm-hmm.
I may have read it into what he was saying, but I just remarked to somebody that sounds like someone who knows he's not going to pull this out.
Okay, but we'll be back with more. With Dennis Goldford of Drake University, Chris Larimer of the University of Northern Iowa. Your reaction to the election results, 2012 general election, what do you think the results mean? Is there an issue there that got a bump up or a bump down? Share your joy, your disappointment in the results that you see and what you see going forward. 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org, our email. We're also on Facebook, or tweet us at IPR Talk. A big evening for gays and lesbians in the country. We'll talk about that when we come back. Also for women, the Senate now has 19 members who are women. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. And we're back with our post-election day dissection. Our dissectors are Dennis Goldford of Drake University and Chris Larimer of the University of Northern Iowa, taking a look at this election. What the results mean for us going forward. We've looked at Iowa's congressional districts, 2-2, a 2-2 split. In the East, we have the Democrat incumbents staying in place, and in the West, the GOP staying in place there. Let's talk a little bit about one of the races, the first district. This was a rematch of the with incumbent Ben Lang rematch with incumbent Democrat Bruce Braley, Republican challenger Ben Lang defeated. And talking about what he thought made the difference in the race, he credited what he called the Obama machine with generating turnout, especially in early voting.
When you saw those first numbers come in, that's all early voting numbers. And so for a candidate to have to make up and climb back out of that, the hole there that the early voting causes, it makes it tough. And I think that's an attribute to the organization that the Democratic Party has put together. And I think this is really going to be a call to action to the Republican Party out there. If we're going to compete across the state and across this country, we have to realize that early voting is here to stay. And as much as we like to go in the ballot booth and vote on election day, we have to go out and start competing early so that we don't have this deficit to make up in the first 2%, 3%, 4%, 5% of the reporting.
Ben Lang last night after losing to Bruce Braley. Is he onto something, Dennis Goldford? The GOP hasn't been pushing that early voting hard enough. Will they have to change that in the future?
Well, the more early voting becomes an accepted practice, they may well. I guess I'm an old fogey enough that I like the feeling of walking into the polling place on the day of the election. But increasingly, people seem to be willing to vote early. But I would suggest, and Chris would have a better vantage point for eastern Iowa than I would, but I guess I was surprised by how relatively easily the incumbents over there won. But when Mr. Lang talks about the Obama machine, I mean, the Obama people did have a very good organization, but that didn't seem to do any good for Kristi Vilsack or for Leonard Boswell if it was simply the Obama organization.
We did think these races were going to be closer, the Lang Braley race and the Lobsack Archer race, didn't we, Chris?
Yeah, I think maybe we thought they'd be a little bit closer, but we have to remember in 2010, the Lang race was, within 2 percentage points in large part because, there was quite a bit of outside money coming into the race from the American Future Fund and other places. And so that was a big factor in 2010. 2010 was certainly a big Republican year. And so 2012 was much different. We didn't see as much outside money. It was not 2010. And really, if you lived in the district and you watched these commercials, you saw Ben Lang really talking about national issues. And really trying to adopt some of the national rhetoric and talking about issues as opposed to really trying to focus on eastern Iowa. And, for him, it was a tough play because, for the most part, Iowa's economic condition has been improving relative to the national condition. And so he had to talk about issues more long term, but that didn't seem to play well with eastern Iowa voters.
Join our conversation. What is your reaction to the election results? What do you think they mean? 1-866-780-9100. Let's go to John in Mason City. Hi, John. What's on your mind the day after this election?
I'm a bit left, and I was pretty happy that Obama won, but I was kind of shocked at how much money was spent this time, and I think that it's almost like a warning shot across the bow here. We the Supreme Court saying that corporations are people too. The Koch brothers, a number of things, with money being in basically corporate and a very few hands in general, the chances of somebody being able to buy an election are getting more and more possible, in my opinion. And, I think you can see the Koch brothers actually replaced Republicans who weren't conservative enough with other Republicans who were Tea Party type people, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. As we go forward, we really need to look at how much money we should be spending on these elections.
Okay, John, thanks for that comment. Let's talk about it a little bit. Did the super PACs, Dennis, you first, the super PACs, the Supreme Court ruling, including, we mentioned the Koch brothers, what about the $53 million Sheldon Adelson donated? Did that even move the needle in this election, do you think?
Well, and I heard it was $100 million ultimately from Adelson. But consider, we started off with a Democratic president, a narrowly Democratic Senate, and a Republican House. And $1 or $2 billion later, we ended up with a Democratic president, a slightly more Democratic House, and a slightly less Republican, slightly more Democratic Senate, and a slightly less Republican House. So that's very expensive per seat, so to speak, with $1 or $2 billion. I think what happened was the Obama people, with small donations, were able to counteract, because of the volume of small donations, were able to counteract the fewer but larger big donations on the Republican side.
Mm-hmm. So going forward, this is just going to be what we'll have to live with going forward. Do you either of you see any change in our campaign financing?
Not in the short run, and I would think the donors would wonder what actually they got for how much bang do they get for their buck.
I think and to follow up a little bit with Dennis on that, I think that's exactly right. You know, this is the first presidential election since the Citizens United ruling, and really what. Just looking at across the political landscape, so to speak, it really appeared as though these corporations had free rein to spend money, and they basically just threw up all this money and tried to spread it around as much as possible. But there wasn't a lot of systematic testing about, okay, what works and what doesn't work. We have no idea about how well some of these ads worked in terms of persuading voters.
They threw up this money, but was it throw up, I guess, is the question.
Right.
Kathy joining us in Des Moines. Hi, Kathy.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I'm an independent voter, and this year I basically is the first time that I ever donated to a presidential campaign and did anything as far as knocking on doors or registering voters or anything else. And I did that for Obama. I think that I have to agree with your previous caller that what inspired me to get involved was because of Citizens United, that it is basically causing us to basically not even open up our elections to be bought, but even by people outside of the country. I mean, these corporations are, can be owned by anybody, and I think it's something that we need to basically overturn.
Mm-hmm.
But what I was encouraged about in this election is that people basically have figured out that it is we the people that control our destiny, and that if you're concerned about something, that you need to do something about it.
Kathy,
and I really am happy that that's come about.
Kathy, thank you for your call, your observations from Des Moines. In past elections, apathy has been something that people have talked about. I don't know if this election is the anti-apathy election. 72% of eligible voters in Iowa cast a ballot. Can we say anything about that? Is that measured at all in these results?
Well, I don't know if it's measured. I think Kathy's comments are quite interesting because for the most part, people are turned off by money. And she seemed to be turned on by the fact that a lot of money was being spent and that it really turned her on to engage in the political process. Just thinking about students, that's when you talk to students about the political process, money always comes up as the one item that they're extremely negative about and extremely frustrated by what they see going on.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit before the hour ends about another major issue that was on our ballot, actually on the back of our ballots here in Iowa. The campaign to oust Iowa Supreme Court Justice David Wiggins was defeated last night. Wiggins, one of the seven justices who ruled unanimously to overturn the state's ban on same-sex marriage back in 2009. Three other Iowa justices involved in that decision were not retained. Remember that 2 years ago in the 2010 election. Wiggins needed a simple majority, and with 99% of the precincts reporting, he has 54% voting to retain him. Connie Ryan Terrell with Justice Not Politics, the group that campaigned to keep Wiggins in court, says there are many reasons they succeeded this year but failed in 2010.
Well, a lot of compounding factors. Certainly it was closer to 2009 and the court's decision. It was a midterm election, and so you didn't have as many voters. We had a very short amount of time in order to respond to the attacks on the court and that influence of an enormous amount of money. And so to balance out the voice that was happening at that time, certainly they had more access to airwaves at the time. I mean, there were just a lot of compounding factors. Plus, we also know, if you look at the polls, we know that marriage equality for same-sex families is moving in the right direction. It's moving in a direction where Iowans believe that everyone should be treated equally. And so what happens with the judicial retention mirrors what's happening on that issue as well.
Bob Vanderplaats of the Family Leader, who headed the campaign to unseat Justice David Wiggins, agrees that the electorate was different this time around.
2 years ago, that was on nobody's radar. And so we really had to do an education effort to people in Iowa about what is a judicial retention effort. Well, in 2012, the numbers have ballooned because of a presidential election year. And so now you have to re-educate and maybe educate for the first time some voters who haven't participated in that process. So it's a different process where they have to physically turn the ballot over, vote no on a Supreme Court judge, and they usually need to know why am I voting no on a Supreme Court judge. That's why we always thought this race against Wiggins would be an uphill battle.
Okay, Bob Vanderplaats last night. I wonder, Chris Larimer, does this mean that the movement to unseat justices involved in that same-sex marriage ruling, and I believe there are still a few coming in the years to come for retention votes, has this lost enough steam to be successful with future efforts?
Yeah, I don't see future justices getting the no vote, I guess. I think, you know, this will continue to be a non-issue for most Iowans. That, you know, their attitudes are changing. They seem to be moderating a little bit when it comes to same-sex marriage. I mean, the Varnum ruling completely reshaped how people thought about these retention votes, or maybe just shaped how they thought about them, if they thought about them at all before that. But I think the further we get out from it, if we continue to look at the polls, I see this as being a non-issue going forward.
Let's go to West Des Moines. Mel is joining us. Hi, Mel. You wanted to talk about this particular issue.
Yeah, I wanted to mention in particular that with the Wiggins situation and the other ones that were voted off the bench, it seems to me like Republicans many times, and it was even the comments from Barb Vanderplaats, that he's saying that the people aren't educated enough. Mm. So it seems like he's assuming that we're not educated enough to know this time around what the removal process means. Secondly, that's the point, is if they disagree with something like the bench, then you have what they call activist judges, and they should be voted off the bench. Not that these people are interpreting the Constitution in a way that should be, but they're interpreting the Constitution as the way that they're actively legislating from the bench. And it goes to the other point, too. I'll bring it up, even though it's not so much of a local issue, maybe more of a state or even the federal issue, is that when Republicans speak, they have a tendency to say that, just like McConnell said 4 years ago, you know, the number one thing was for them to get rid of Obama after 1 year. Well, he didn't do it, but now he's saying that Obama has to come with his, you know, with materials that or laws that the House will definitely be able to pass. So it sounds like Obama has to make the compromise that they're not moving. They didn't move in the last 2 years very much. They were the laziest Congress since 1948. Mm-hmm. You know, so with the activist judges and the aspect of compromise, I'm one who sees that there's going to be continued problems until these people that are so regimented in their thinking start to understand that the majority has a say.
Mel, thank you for your view from West Des Moines. Let's go to James. James, I don't know, where are you calling from?
Des Moines.
Hi, James. Quickly, your view. Our hour is getting away from us.
Well, I abhor all the outside money that came into the state, whether it was for elected officials or judges. I had hoped that this would mute Vanderplaats for a while. The man knows nothing about government and believes that the majority should rule, even one that discriminates against the minority. The primary purpose of the Constitution is to protect the minority from the tyranny of the majority. And it is also the place of last resort to get justice. They don't understand that Varnum would have never happened if they had not passed the Defense of Marriage Act. We would still be looking for a case that would be justiciable, and same-sex marriage would still not be on the books. My last point is activist judges are in the rule of the eye of the beholder. Citizens United, you want to talk about inactivist judges, the Supreme Court ruling on that issue dumped 100 years of common law.
Okay.
And so, as I said again, activist judges are in the eye of the beholder.
We've got it. James from Des Moines. Let's move to Iowa City. Dan is joining us from Dan. Please make it quick, Dan. What's up?
Yeah, hi. The big problem I see with our legislative branch is that it's a constant campaign, even starting today after the election, and no one wants to vote for anything that's in the interest of the country if it's going to hurt their chances of re-election.
Okay.
I wonder if there are any thoughts from I guess, on that.
Right, Dan, that's the big question, isn't it? Are we still stuck in the same mode we were before this election? This election get us anywhere, Dennis Goldford?
I'm not optimistic. I don't want to romanticize the past, but until roughly about 25, 30 years ago, I think power used to be about issues. You wanted political power to deal with certain issues, solve our problems. But over the past quarter century or so, increasingly with the impact of mass media and so forth, issues are now about power. In other words, the issue you adopt, the issue you're concerned about, is the issue that's going to help you gain political power or hold political power or take it away from your opponent. And so I'm not really optimistic.
Let's talk a little bit about the Iowa Senate because, as we mentioned, the Democrats will remain control of the Iowa Senate, Chris. Divided government in Iowa. How is that likely to work or influence the legislative session?
Well, I think you'll still see the same arguments that we've seen the last two sessions, or at least particularly this last legislative session. There's still going to be some talk about education reform, about commercial property tax reform. We know that Governor Branstad is still pushing for that and pushing quite hard to try to get his sort of signature policy achievement. And so I think we're still going to continue to see a little bit of gridlock there. You may or may not see some movement going forward, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's close to a repeat of the 2012 session.
Dennis Goldford, certainly a lot of elections, a lot of candidates who won, things that happened nationwide. What caught your attention we haven't mentioned this hour that really stands out about the 2012 election?
I think the fact that the Democrats actually gained some seats in the Senate when even as recently as a few months ago, people thought there was probably a 3 out of 5 chance that the Republicans would take control of the Senate. But the Republicans nominated a bunch of candidates like Mr. Murdoch and Mr. Aiken and various others that just really couldn't do the job. They were considered too out of the mainstream by most voters. So that really struck me.
And, of course, talking of the Senate, we have the Senate's first openly gay member, Tammy Baldwin, elected in Wisconsin, and the big win out in Massachusetts, Elizabeth Warren, to change that. They will be in the left wing of the Senate, we would think. Right, Dennis?
Well, it depends how you mean left wing, but I mean they will certainly be part of the Democratic majority. And it's possible, I believe, that the Democrats could have 56 seats. They don't quite have a filibuster-proof majority, but this gets very interesting now if you consider the possibility of one or more Supreme Court retirements and Mr. Obama nominating someone to the court.
Chris, what are you looking at in the next few days after people have got over the joy or the disappointment of what happened yesterday when things start churning again on Capitol Hill?
I guess a few things. If there are really any genuine efforts at bipartisanship, whether it's by the president or Speaker Boehner or Senator McConnell. And I guess, within Iowa, I'm looking to see, which candidate is coming to Des Moines before or right after Thanksgiving.
Don't say 2016.
Today is the first day of the 2016
caucus
season.
Paul Ryan has to do his thank you tour through Iowa at some point. So, he's got to be setting himself up.
You mentioned history. Before we go, Dennis, you were asked many times what election this reminded you of, coming to it, historical precedents, obsessive speculating from all kinds of people across the country. So was this a 1980, a 2004, a 2000, or a 1976, can we say?
I think it was really more of a 2004 election. It was pretty tight down to the end. You had two candidates who really weren't that strong, and again, I don't think either one this time was that strong.
Do you expect that President Obama will change his tact because he was trying to be the postpartisan president? That was his call in 2008. In his speech last night, we saw him going back, even hearkening back to that speech at the Democratic Convention. Not a red, not a blue America, a United States of America. Do you think he will follow up with that talk, with the walk? At least try to, Dennis?
Well, as I said earlier, that's what remains to be seen. I mean, he's going to have to be a different kind of president from what he has been during his first 4 years. And we've heard a lot of Democrats say over the past 4 years, will he just please lead, or where is Lyndon Johnson when you really need him?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you both very much for joining us for this post-election dissection. Dennis Goldford of Drake University and Chris Larimer of the University of Iowa, thank you very much for joining us, and thanks to all the callers, emailers who joined in with our discussion.
Thank you.
A pleasure.
Coming up tomorrow on this program, we'll listen back to my conversation with the 2011 Nobel laureate in chemistry, Dan Schechtman of Iowa State University and the Ames Lab. It was Schechtman's discovery of quasicrystals in 1982 that upended the scientific world because it forced scientists to reconsider the very nature of matter. That conversation from earlier this year, Nobel laureate in chemistry from 2011, Dan Schechtman. Tomorrow on this program. River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Sarah Bowden, and Catherine Perkins. Today we had help in Cedar Falls from Tony Daner, in Des Moines from John Pemble. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Catherine Perkins. We always welcome your comments and questions. RiverToRiver@iowapublicradio.org is our email. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.